But I think we have to look at other things as well, and our concept of freedom, I think, is very important.
You know, there is an English woman school teacher, she's headmistress of some school, and when I was at Victoria High School as a student, she came and talked to this, or gave a lecture, whatever you want to call it, to the students of Victoria High School. And she made this expression. She said, the test of true democracy is the amount of freedom that one individual can stand without going to pieces. Now ponder on that.
Yeah.
And
I think you can actually apply that to society too, instead of just saying the individual.
Exactly. Because democracy is the, well, we talk about the four freedoms devised at Some Oaks in California, the start of the Charter of NATO, the build up to NATO.
Oh, you mind what you mean, the conference?
The initial conference was held in California.
White Oaks, Seven Oaks.
Something. One of the Oaks, Thousand Oaks or something like that. Well, this is when they conceived the four freedoms, the freedom of speech and the freedom of
thought,
freedom of religion, freedom to worship, freedom to talk, and the other two, freedom from fear and freedom from starvation or something like that. And that's just the basis of what you call your individual freedom. And this Charter of Rights, anything that some individual thinks he's being hurt, then he has a right to scream and have his case heard. Well, that's your individual freedom. But apparently to get it heard, if you don't have enough money to back you up to take you right through the courts to the Supreme Court of Canada now, you haven't got much of a chance.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying the system is such that it mitigates against that kind of freedom?
But the problem is so many people don't know what freedom means.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's because a degree of selfishness has crept into it, where we're just thinking about in terms of our own gratification?
It could be. I'm not a psychologist, and I don't want to get into philosophical discourse.
Yeah.
But you see, in a war, a soldier sacrifices his freedom as soon as he puts on a uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he can't say he has certainly has certain channels of redress, but he can't say, if he doesn't want to get up in the morning, you can't do this to me, I prefer to stay here. So he has to accept that discipline. And it seems to me that it isn't lawlessness, it's just lack of regard for your fellow man in your own society. Why do we have all these petty crimes today? And it isn't only being done by mature people, it's being done by children.
Mostly teenagers.
Mostly teenagers. Well, how is it? Where have we, as parents, failed to have our teenagers doing what they're doing? And it's evident in the school system today, because it's the grade 8 and 9s who are the ones who think they're educated enough to know it all.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start to revolt against discipline.
Well, in great many cases, they've had no discipline enforced upon them. So it's not a question of revolting against.
You know, where does it start, though?
It has to start at home.
That's it. That's the very thing. And you can't learn self-discipline until you've been disciplined yourself.
Mm-hmm. Most part I agree with it. As a generalization, I think I agree with you, but I don't know whether that can be applied. apply to all cases. I think self-discipline is a matter of internal will. And yes, it's beneficial if you have had discipline enforced upon you. But you can build it without it. I think, at least.
Well, how is it you can have two children in the same family, and one can be a virtue of, or an example of perfect virtue,
mm-hmm.
and the other one can be a complete hellion?
I don't know.
And yet they're out of the same womb, and by the same father.
Well, my brother and myself are two polar opposites. He's a high school dropout. I'm a university, soon to be a graduate.
Yeah.
Our tastes and likes are completely different. Our personalities are different. Isn't that good, do you think? Because that's an expression of perhaps the personality of the person.
Well, your brother received the same
upbringing.
Type of care. He had the same upbringing as you. Well, has he been influenced by somebody else in his life?
Different peer group, perhaps.
There you are.
But then you're dealing with something with all of society, not just the classroom or the home. It's. Are you very strongly religious?
No.
Mm-hmm.
I have one belief, and I believe in a superior being, and that is my. If you want to, well, that's my belief.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether it's religious or not, I don't know.
Yeah. How do you define it?
Well, I. Says, let's go back to some of these simplistic things like the Golden Rule.
Mm-hmm.
I try to live by it. Very often I find I haven't.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing I can say.
I know I'm getting way off topic, but we've got a little bit of tape, and it's interesting to gauge your viewpoints on certain issues. I hope you don't mind my doing this.
No, not at all.
There's quite a debate going on in Victoria right now. As a matter of fact, it's in the courts. And I see it as a form of censorship myself, the red-hot video on pornography. I don't like what they're producing myself. And a lot of the arguments against it are valid.
Yeah.
And yet, it is an infringement of freedom to have it banned.
Well, my theory on that is, Chris,
mm-hmm.
if you don't like it, you don't have to watch it.
Precisely.
And that's just... Now, it was what is revolting to some people
mm-hmm.
may be... very erotic and so on to others.
Yeah.
But if you don't like it, you got to switch right on your radio or TV set. You got to switch on your radio and shut it off.
Yeah. Well, how would you argue, how would you answer the argument that children might get their hands on it without parental supervision?
I have no qualms about letting children see what they want to see
mm-hmm.
if they can understand what is being portrayed on the picture. Now, a lot of them will watch TV and they won't know what the hell it's all about.
Mm-hmm. Just colorful figures.
Just colorful. You might as well give them Pac-Man.
Yeah.
Or you might as well give them Star Trek or something like that. I don't think it has that much in...
Kids have always been intrigued by things of that nature, and they've always got their hands on books, like Lady Chatterley's Lover in the 30s,
yeah, sure.
Or... perhaps slightly dirty books in
yeah.
the 50s and 60s. Yeah. It's been there and they've got their hands on it.
Yeah.
I think we're focusing far too much attention upon it.
Well,
it's women's groups.
Yeah, when my youngest daughter,
mm-hmm.
I think she was 8, and she was reading when she was 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
And we were up at our camp at Shawnigan, and I don't know where she found the book, but it was Mickey Spillane's book called My Gun Is Quick. And I just couldn't believe the child was reading it. So I thought, well, I'll let her read it, and then I'll question her to see how much she's got out of it.
Had you read it before?
Oh, yes, I'd read. No, I stole it from her to read, to find out what the hell she was reading. You know, I thought it was some salacious... literature or something like that. Anyway, my gosh, I questioned her about this. I didn't tell her she shouldn't read it.
Mm-hmm.
I just said, what are you reading, Margot? Oh, she says, I'm reading this book by Mickey Spillane. And I said, what's this called? This is called My Gun Is Quick.
Mm-hmm.
So I quickly, when she wasn't reading it, I was. And then I started to question her.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she had a lot out of that book. She whether it was just memory, a good retention.
Mm-hmm. But she understood it.
She understood it, yeah.
I think a lot of people are saying that if you read something like that, you'll adopt what is being practiced in the book.
Not necessarily.
Yeah. That's an extreme viewpoint, isn't it?
I think so.
Because there's a great danger in banning something. Like, Lady Chatterley's Lover, have you read?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
That was tried in 1960 as being pornographic.
I know.
And I'm not saying that it's a great work of art, but it's a very important novel, I think.
Sure it is. Yeah. Well, one of his TV, on the Channel 9 last night, was...
Sons and Lovers.
Yeah, well, that's Lawrence. Yeah. That's his stories.
Yeah.
And, of course, he was, that was naughty. Very, very naughty.
Well, he used the big words.
Well, we were coming out of the Victorian era.
Yeah.
Where, you couldn't... you had to change all the bad words into words like drat-it. And, I'll be teetotally chawed up. Things like that. That's an American expression for someone being so upset that they're teetotally chawed up. Now, what the hell is teetotally chawed up?
Mm-hmm.
Where did it come from?
It was just a word, something drummed up to replace something else.
It was just another expletive, that's all.
Well, how do you feel about censorship?
I said, let it go free.
Yeah. Because if it's something is that bad, it's going to die out.
Exactly.
It always has in the past.
Sure it will.
Yeah. Or it'll find its niche, and people will demand that the quality will improve. And really, I read this somewhere.
We used to talk about 9-day wonders.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all this is right now. It's a 9-day wonder. And surely the courts are going to make the most out of it, and then the individuals who serve the courts, the lawyers,
mm-hmm.
they're the ones who are going to make the most out of it.
They always do.
But last night on TV, there was one of the churches, United Church of Canada,
mm-hmm.
has now decided that they must do something about pornography to
take a stand, I guess.
To knock it out of the dictionary, if you like. But they're facing the same problem as everybody else who is trying to define what pornography is.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
What is obscene? What is pornographic?
That's right.
I mean, in Ontario, they have obscenity laws, which are... there are things that are shown in BC films which can't be shown because it's deemed to be obscene. I mean, I was talking with someone yesterday about this, and there are things that people do on a natural basis in the privacy of their own bedrooms, which are considered to be obscene in Ontario.
Yeah.
I mean, that's absurd.
Yeah.
It really is. An article I was reading on the weekend asserted that most people who are involved in this on a leadership level are doing it to be morally above the people who are actually involved, people who actually view pornographic material.
Oh, I understand. Yeah, I get the inference there. Well,
I agree with that. I think that the people are trying to be, they're soothing their own egos.
Mm-hmm.
They feel they're doing something and that they're better than these people. And actually they're trying to shame them.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of the holier-than-thou attitude.
Oh, precisely, yeah.
I remember someone saying to me when I was a kid, in their eyes, I guess I was doing something naughty. And they said to me, I wouldn't do that if I were you. And I looked at them and I said, I know you wouldn't because you're not me. So...
That's a problem. When you start dealing with things on that kind of level and not thinking individually. And that's what society is. It's a mixture of individuals, not a people working for themselves on a free basis instead of working for the society, which I hope we're getting towards. I think we are, actually. I think we're moving away from a lot of the socialistic NDP ideals. The last election showed it, though not in Victoria, oddly enough.
Well, that's only because of the high percentage of civil servants here,
mm-hmm.
both federal, particularly BC civil servants, or public servants, as they call them. That's just a protest vote.
You think so?
Oh, yes.
To preserve their own jobs.
That's right. And to further their own ends financially or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've come a long way when you think of social legislation. I was shocked, absolutely shocked, when my youngest daughter was to have her first child. She's working in Toronto, and she says, well, I'm going to get 13 weeks pregnancy leave. And I says, what the hell is pregnancy leave? Well, she says, these companies now, you can get 13 weeks off if you become, when you're about to deliver your child, you can get 13 weeks off.
Full pay.
Full pay. Well, God, I didn't know that. I was just completely overcome. I just sat there and said, my God, what's the world coming to?
Yeah. As if the choice for having a child is no longer a personal decision.
No.
In which one has to make some degree of sacrifice.
That's it.
That's a degree of a selfishness, isn't it? In, at least in my eyes. One instance of it.
Well, that's this is the very thing we're talking about. Is it's the avariciousness today of the individual.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask about 10 years ago, you ask a child who'd like to, an adolescent, they'd like a job, do some work,
mm-hmm.
and they're quite capable of doing it. And he'd say, what's in it for me? Or the other expression is, what am I going to get out of it?
Mm-hmm.
And if you said minimum wage, you don't have to pay them a minimum wage until they're 16.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you offer them a minimum wage, if it was 14 or 15, he'd probably put his nose up to, just put his thumb up to his nose and say, no thanks.
Yeah.
Not enough in it for me. Or I'm not going to get enough out of it.
Well, isn't it the case now when a great many of the paper routes are delivered by older people,
absolutely.
Senior citizens?
There's an older father. He has a daughter and a son. And they're looking after this building. We get the times.
Mm-hmm.
And there's times when the son can't deliver or the daughter can't deliver. So the father delivers.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a very fine gentleman. I enjoyed chatting with him. And but, you see, here is a father. He's stepping in and helping out his children when he wants them to enjoy the sports they enjoy,
mm-hmm.
and if their delivery time
conflicts,
and if they're both enjoying sports, he's on the job.
Mm-hmm.
So he's filling in for them.
Well, that sounds like a very close family in some way.
It is. I recognize it's a very close family.
Yeah.
And this I like to see.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are others, old age pensioners, that like to get up or can't sleep in the morning,
mm-hmm.
like something like that.
And they get them active too.
It keeps something. Them moving, keeps
yeah.
them active.
But kids have such high expectations today. I think it was even different for me 10 years ago, being in that age group. And I think partially it's because my father was rather old fashioned.
Mm.
I mowed lawns all over the yard. I delivered papers the time I was 7 or 8 until I started working. A lot has to do with upbringing, I guess.
You see, at one time, that was done because the family needed the money. They'd had to come in to keep the family in existence. And we just go back 100 years and go back to almost the tail end of the Industrial Revolution in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, my father-in-law indentured as a watchmaker when he was 13 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells the story about getting the money. He was paid weekly, and I think it was about 2 or 3 shillings.
Mm-hmm.
He would go home and give his mother all the money he received for his weekly salary, and she would give him probably 2 pennies
mm-hmm.
back. And that was his allowance for the week.
And yet he was putting in a solid day's work.
He was putting in 12 hours.
Yeah. Well, my mother tells a story about how during the war, she was a young girl, about 20 or thereabouts, doing war work and living at home, and that she would give her paycheck immediately to her mother.
That's right.
And it was just not something she thought about. Was it something that happened?
You just did it, that was
yeah.
all. And that was the right and proper thing to do at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And if it didn't teach the social graces or anything like that, at least taught one thing, and that was frugality.
Mm-hmm.
Taught you how to
appreciate money.
Appreciate the use of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a kid, I lived just up here on Fell Street, just off Oak Bay Avenue. And on Friday afternoons, I'd go scouting around the local streets looking for loads of wood sitting on the roadside.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd rush up to knock on the door and ask the lady if she'd like her wood taken in. And it would take me probably, if it was a cord, it would probably take me an hour and a half. Some of them wanted it stacked in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them wanted just whatever contract you made with them. And that would probably be, well, just to throw it in the basement, that was 25 cents. And to stack it would be 35 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes out of the generosity of their hearts, they might give you a nickel more for being a good boy. But with that money, what is now the McPherson Theater was called the Pantages at that time. It was a circuit.
Mm-hmm.
Ran from San Francisco. There were five or six on the Pantages circuit, five or six cities.
Was it a vaudevillian?
A mixture. This was the beginning of the motion picture in 1917, 18. And they would show you, first of all, a one reel.
Comedy, I guess.
It would be one of those serials.
Really?
Yeah, you get a reel, and it may be a seven or eight reel serial.
Mm-hmm.
So you only got one each week. And this was just the comeback to get you back.
Uh-huh.
And that you'd get for probably half an hour. And then you'd get an hour's vaudeville.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw characters. I saw Al Jolson.
Really?
Yes. And, there were others. Oh, yeah. Al Jolson.
Singer or comedian?
Oh, he was one. There was also the fellow who sang You Love Susie Like I Love Susie.
Eddie Cantor?
Eddie Cantor. He was on that circuit. There was also Burns and Allen.
Uh-huh. You saw Burns and Allen when they were together?
Yeah.
You?
And I saw Gallagher and Sheen.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there was also always an animal act.
Mm-hmm.
Elephants and tigers. One of the circus act.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one where they gave a demonstration on helmet diving, you know, the hard top diving. They had a tremendous big tank set up.
Mm-hmm.
And this diver, she showed you through this glass what he did. While he was underwater, I tell you, it was quite revealing. But the serials, the motion picture serials that were running then, was one called The Perils of Pauline.
With Mary Pickford?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know if it was Mary Pickford or not. But anyway, it was The Perils of Pauline. There was another one called The Iron Claw.
Mm-hmm.
There was, Rootin' Tootin' Shootin' Tom Mix.
Mm-hmm.
And William S. Hart, and you just couldn't wait until next Saturday to get down and see what's going to happen the next year. And it always ended with the Perils of Pauline. She was generally tied to a railroad track, and the train was coming. Things like that, you know.
Well, how much did it cost to get into this?
Oh, a nickel. For the Pantages, I think for the matinee on Saturday afternoon it was 15 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And you got very, very good entertainment, I'm telling you.
Would Jolson be there in blackface?
Yes, he was blackface.
Mm-hmm.
He was in a, I think it was Mammy he sang. That was it, Mammy.
Was he a big star at the time, or was he?
Oh, no, well, he wasn't to us because we were there. You didn't see, there wasn't the big ballyhoo. There was newspaper advertising.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember in the theater, the acts were, there was a panel on either side with electric lights, and you watch this, and Act A would come up,
mm-hmm.
so the light would show an A, illuminated A, and then B would come up. There'd probably be five acts, A, B, C, and D, and maybe E.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, and I had a little girlfriend. I was, what, 9, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this would be about 1919. And, of course, she and I, she'd get all dressed up in her little pretty little pinafore and so on. We'd go hand in hand down to the Pantages Theater.
Mm-hmm. And you'd pay, of course.
Hmm?
You'd pay, of course?
Oh, yeah, well, man, no man would take a girl Dutch street. So this is how I got my money, going around taking in wood,
mm-hmm.
so I could have my entertainment along with my little girlfriend on the weekend.
Would you buy her candy?
Oh yes, we always had some candy.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating.
How are we on to this subject?
How are you feeling?
What?
So I think we're getting pretty near the end of the tape. Yeah. Well, sir, thank you very much.
Okay,
well, I know we've wandered a lot.
I know, Chris, we have.
Yeah, but I enjoy that.
Yeah.
And, well, thanks very much.
Well, not at all. And I hope I've been of some benefit, made some small contribution to the archives.
Well, you've done for my archives anyway.
Okay.
Thank you.